Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.1. Please stay tuned until after the podcast when Red Hot Chili Peppers debut their new single, Land of Fornication. So Ace walks in and he's like, "Oh, I'm really hungover. How's that going for you?"
It's going.
You had a wedding this weekend.
Yeah, I was a groomsman this weekend.
I had a wedding this weekend and I'm fine. Look at me.
Were you in the wedding party?
No, I also left at 8:30 because I have a small child.
We did not leave at 8:30. I left close at 8:30 in the morning.
Well, maybe if good God, this is not responsible bloggery. You just flitting off.
It was responsible groomsmanship.
Well, doesn't sound like it.
That was my end of the bargain.
Do you remember everything that transpired?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, so that's doubly disappointing. You didn't wake up with a strange woman or horse?
No.
or both. Not that you would have sexual congress with the horse, just like you stole it.
Yeah.
Did that need to be clarified?
I would hope not.
Anyway, welcome to MGO Podcast 9.1.
A very professional podcast.
We are in the Michigan room of the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, one of 13 conference rooms, one for each team in the Big Ten. Our sponsors are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Homeshore Lending, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, surprise, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Hummus, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Peak Wealth Management. Michigan defeats Florida 33-17 in a game that was nowhere near that close spiritually.
Yeah.
And, I mean, kind of the best case scenario in all but a couple facets.
Yeah, I mean, you take out kind of three plays in there, maybe, yeah. And that's about as good as it gets, especially for a week one game where weird stuff happens in week one.
And I'm told the Michigan band played the Jaws theme.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
So way to go,
that,
Michigan
that
band.
That tweet made my day.
I just hope that's going to follow them around.
Yeah, they're just going to... I would hope the SEC knows to do that.
There's got to be a game day that's involving Florida, a road game for Florida. Maybe the cocktail.
The signage would be, yeah. Unfortunately, they're going to be so crappy, possibly, that they might not earn a game day spot.
Yeah.
That did not look like a game day worthy team.
Well, you know, sometimes there's bad weeks.
That's true. Especially when you play Don Brown.
Yes, but that's another segment.
That is the next segment.
So this segment is, of course, talking about the offense. Michigan racks up 450 yards of offense against a defense that was very good last year. Mm-hmm. They lost a lot of guys, but they still projected to be top 20 defense.
Maybe
better.
And their best position group was the one that was facing Michigan's most questionable spot because their defensive ends were their strong suit.
Right.
And we did get to see some of that, unfortunately.
Well, we did, but we also saw a ton of runs break outside the tackles.
Yes.
So I don't know what percentage of Michigan's ground yardage happened because someone realized that there was a bounce available and took it, but it's at least 50%.
Yeah, I was about to say half at the very least.
Yeah, and I mean, Ty Isaac was the main beneficiary, but we saw Chris Evans get a couple, mm-hmm. and then
Higdon had a really nice bounce in there.
Well, he also had one where he really should have... Not you know, bounced it.
He was one for two on bounces.
One for two. But that was a really strange thing for me to see because that's really rare.
Yeah.
That the whole game, you're just seeing a team just fail to have a force player.
Yeah. And basically let the other team just go full-blown Michael Shaw on every run except have it work.
Right.
That was weird. Also, the third and long runs working every single time was pretty strange. They clearly noticed something because I don't think you call it four third and long runs without knowing some sort of tendency that you're going to exploit there.
No, they got three of them, and then one was 5, 6, 7, 8 yards to get them into Quinn Nordin field
range. That's
right,
yeah.
Which was a long amount of range.
Yeah, running to add to it may not have been necessary.
Are we going to do the NCAA football thing where we run backwards to see if we can get him a record?
I mean, considering he missed a 30-yarder, maybe that's what they should do.
All right. Well, that's also another segment.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
But so one of those was one of those Sparrow draws, the offset draw, that Florida had a twist on. And that's not a good play to have a twist on against.
Yeah.
Because the end dives inside, and then the tackle can't get out fast enough. And so Isaac was just like, okay, here I go. And Isaac is like, I mentioned this in the season preview, like when you get him up to like full flight in the open field, that's when he looks like a five-star.
Yeah, he's really impressive when he gets out there because he's just so dang big too. There's no way you're dragging him down on first contact if he's at full speed.
Right, and he's got a little wiggle to him, like enough to make it count with his size.
Yeah, he can kind of juke and get like a half man tackling him sort of.
Right, and then he gets like running through his shoulder. Yards after contact, which got him the first down on that 3rd and 13.
Yeah.
Had a couple other nice 3rd and long runs that kept Michigan on the field. And the whole bounce thing was so consistent that it felt like it was game planned, if you can even do that. Like, it seems bizarre.
Yeah, especially like first game, you know, you flip to the other side of the ball, you're not supposed to know what the other team's going to be running necessarily.
Yeah.
But it sure seemed like Harbaugh had downloaded that. I mean, Randy Shannon's been running the same thing for a long time, but it did still seem like they shouldn't have been able to download that defense like heading into the game, it seemed like.
I'd be fascinated to see what it looks like in UFR because I've never seen such a bounce-heavy run game work so effectively.
Expecting the RPS number to be pretty heavily in Michigan's favor.
Yeah. So that kind of makes the interior OL hard to judge because so many times it was just like, okay, we're gonna bounce outside, and then they got stuffed a fair amount by a very good defense.
Yeah, and there were some plays that were just funky because Florida was just not really defending. Like there was one play that the color commentator highlighted, Mike Onwenu pulling across, and he pulled across and didn't have anybody to hit.
Yeah,
that was the key block, was that he blocked air.
Yeah, that's gotta suck for the color commentator. Right?
It's like, oh,
so this is like a power play on that was the 3rd and long conversion, the first one.
Yeah,
and it's like, all right, it's a power play, and so this
pulling block, guard has gotta be right.
Do something. Then he's like circling him. He's like, oh no, and he just went silent. Yep. And I was like, no,
it wasn't Todd Blackledge's best day.
Well, I mean, that's not his fault, right?
The big boy pants index was more what bothered me.
That's true.
That was really stupid.
Big boy pants.
Can we just say teams are good at football? It feels like we should just stick to that.
Put on your big boy pants. Well, anyway, he was far from the worst color commentator of the weekend.
That's fair.
So the ground game, I think, is encouraging, but we're going to have to see, and we're going to have to continue to improve, I think, especially at right tackle.
Yeah. No, that did still seem like a bit of a sore spot.
But Kugler apparently graded out as Michigan's best offensive lineman,
which is
per Harbaugh today. Yeah. Which is like, if you like, I guess Elizio would have been number one on that list, but like number two, Patrick Kugler, because Kugler seems like the kind of guy who doesn't really have a ton of upside, just because he hasn't been able to play for 4 years.
He's kind of physically maxed out at like not enormous.
He got stuck behind some not great players too.
Yeah.
So if he's grading out well, he's got his assignments down, and he's able to cope physically, then that's pretty much his best-case scenario, and we seem on track for that after week one.
Yeah, and Florida's starting DTs are pretty darn good, too, so if he's holding up against those guys, that's pretty encouraging going forward.
How did we feel about Evans and Higdon?
I thought they did pretty well with what they were given.
Yeah.
I mean, especially Evans, it seemed like he was the victim of a number of plays that were just kind of dead on arrival.
Yeah.
But he had a couple really nice short area jukes. I mean, that's kind of his jam.
Yeah, he had a 29-yarder that burst to the outside where he put a safety on the ground with his little shimmy.
Yeah. And, I mean, Higdon, he had those two runs to close out the driver. They went tempo.
Yeah.
I thought he did a nice job of getting upfield on those.
Especially the first one. The first one was a good bit of running where he's just
kind of doing second one was just so well blocked that he didn't have to do a whole lot.
And one of the Florida players just kind of went right by him, because it was like kind of a zone read look, so he was like attacking the quarterback, and I was like, I got bad news for you, buddy. It's not going to work out.
Also, Wilton Spade's probably not a major keep threat, to be honest.
You'd feel really dumb.
That's true. If he lopes in, then you fire everybody.
Like, was it Maryland last year that got the Jumpman Spade photo
they did
on their faces?
Yeah.
That didn't go over well in the film room.
No.
I guess we should talk about John Wilton Spate Navarre.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Well, I mean, so what do you mean by that?
I mean, he'll just be a little bit off and he'll be inconsistent.
Okay.
Like, it just seems like sometimes he tries to guide it and you get the throw, like the second interception where Perry is wide open.
Yeah.
All he has to do is keep the ball within Perry's frame plus his arm reach, and he didn't manage to even come close to that.
Do you think that's a completion if it's to Zach Gentry?
Probably, yes. Possibly. Zach Gentry is basically taco pants.
Yeah. Well, so there's been some debate about whether the first interception was on him.
I thought that was a pretty good throw. He had a tight window there, and it hit both of Crawford's hands.
Yeah, and I felt that Crawford like has enough time based on how long that throw is to kind of slow up, adjust to the throw, get up there. And I don't think he did a great job of that. And it did, like, it didn't glance off his fingertips, right? It hit him in the hand.
Yeah, it clanged off both his hands.
Right. And that's, like, there was a guy who's got, like, a coach in his Twitter handle who was arguing with me.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, I don't want to.
Don't need to rehash
it. I don't want to drag this guy. But, well, he like, kept it up. So yeah. I quote tweeted him, and then all my mentions, there was like this guy arguing with like three other guys about how he coaches high school football and
therefore
doesn't understand that this is college football, basically.
Yeah.
Then I dragged him anyway. Oh, well. So, I mean, if you do a couple of things in this game, if you turn that Crawford thing into a completion and you give him the touchdown that he gets
scored
a DO plus on, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think people are coming out of this game feeling a lot better about him. And, like, he had Tariq Black had a drop on a well-thrown ball. Mm-hmm. It was a little high, but it's like one of those things where you got to catch that. And he made a lot of good decisions.
Yeah.
Like, all of his decisions were the right decision, pretty much. Like,
yeah.
His accuracy was off a couple times. Like, there was another Crawford throw where we got pressure and he threw it behind him.
Yeah. But his deep ball accuracy was generally good.
Yes.
It was the intermediate stuff that was kind of the problem, because I thought the short stuff, he did a really nice job putting it on guys where they could run after the catch, like the Sean McCune crossing routes for a couple first downs where it was relatively easy pitch and catch, but he was putting it in the right spot.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you do get kind of a pat on the back for executing the easy thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen guys who can't, so might as well appreciate the ones who can.
So, you know, I'm much less down than I feel the internet is about Spate's opening performance. Like, it's really just the second interception that is like...
Yeah, there was like one truly bad throw in there.
And we saw him get pulled and kind of try to settle down. And there were times last year when he was jittery and wasn't entirely locked in. And I think we saw that again. I think we'll see him get locked in later in the year and perform very well. I mean, one thing that I've seen a lot of is like, given the way Spate finished the year, and this is probably my fault because I didn't have the heart to UFR the last two games.
Yeah.
And I went back and I did a passing chart, and Spate was excellent against both those teams.
Yeah, just limited because he was working with a messed up collarbone.
Yeah, he had postseason surgery with the collarbone, and especially in the Florida State game, they could not block at all. Like, DeMarcus Walker versus Kyle Kalos was a huge mismatch.
He was running rampant.
So I think there were 13 throws in that game that I either marked pressure or gave him a plus for,
oof,
which is not good.
No.
It's bad. So I came out of that experience thinking, okay, the Iowa game was actually one off, and then it's, okay, he had two terrible turnovers in the Ohio State game, and those were very costly, but you know, he did put Michigan in a position to win, and then he put Michigan in a position to lose, and from a guy like Spate, I'll take that, right? Because he's a sophomore. Like, if he's doing the right thing on 80% of downs, and then the things that are damaging are maximally damaging, and that's why you lose, I'll take that. Because sometimes you're going to fumble that snap, and you're going to get it back.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're going to throw it to a covered guy, and it's not going to be a pick six. It's going to be, I was close to a pick six, not an actual pick six, but it's going to be dropped.
Yeah. No, he just, he looks like a quarterback who, when he's at his best, can win you games kind of like on his own, really. I mean, when he's dealing, he is really dealing.
Yeah.
And I don't think you get that when you don't kind of just let him loose and let him do his thing.
Well, and he showed a good, I think, understanding. We talked about how he didn't make any bad decisions, and then there was that check he made.
Which was a gorgeous check.
It was a beautiful check. Yeah.
It was a free touchdown.
They're showing zero, and he checks into the thing that I saw like Nebraska do to us 5 years ago. And
Just like basically a rub route on the outside with a wheel.
Yeah, and wide open, and he just airballs it.
Yep.
So great check.
Yeah, phenomenal check.
Just got a little bit ahead of himself.
A little bit.
And
he was too excited about how that developed.
You know, makes that throw. Totally different discussion this morning. Afternoon, whatever. So I'm much more positive about Wilton Spate going forward. I know this wasn't his best game, but I don't think it was his worst game by a mile either.
No, and I think we saw, I mean, when O'Korn came in, they really had him throw just the one fade route to Black.
Right, so he's got that
first
down.
On the first drive, they didn't even ask him to pass. So, I mean, it's clear that they're much more comfortable with Spate, and it seems like they should be.
Well, and we should talk a little bit about O'Korn. I didn't see much from him that would indicate that he was at all viable going forward.
No.
Like, on the second drive, they had him drop back to pass, and he had a good pocket, and then he just waited and didn't have any confidence in what he was seeing.
Yeah.
And I thought he had an open guy, and he also had an opportunity to just go. But
go should be maybe his second read.
Yeah. But that's not great.
No, I mean, that shows you how limited he is as a quarterback.
I mean, he did hit the fade to Black, but that's kind of like, all right, we're going to do the thing that we did in the spring game.
Yeah, and Black, like, ran a really nice route and stacked that guy up. So
yeah, we should talk about that, because I was, when the flag came in, I was like, oh, it was illegal touching.
Yeah, like, he stepped out. He had to.
But he won. He didn't, too. I thought if he had, he would have been pushed out.
Yeah.
But he didn't even get pushed out, and he goes by this guy who's, like, trying to use the sideline.
Yeah, jam him into the sideline.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
So, and then there's this picture that I was putting in the game column today, and he's got 2 yards of separation on this team.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we saw the drop, but really coming close to paying off all of that offseason hype.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, his combination of size and speed is scary, and with apparent route chops to go with it.
Yeah.
It's exciting to see flashes, and I would expect him to be more consistent as the season goes on too, because it was kind of, you know, there was a long touchdown, there was a fade, and there was a drop, and that was about it for his participation.
It was a very promising freshman kind of participation.
He was very eventful or very quiet. And I would assume that as those freshman receivers start getting more comfortable, they will get thrown to more.
Yeah, we saw, I think, one attempt downfield at Peoples-Jones, and that was uncatchable.
Kind of.
And then Grant Perry, I think, was kind of the other story in the wide receiving core.
Yes. Two great, like, away from his body catches in that game.
Yeah, where you just reach up and snag it, like maximizing that catching radius. Like, there was that third down before the ball spin.
Yeah.
Where he's getting interfered with.
Yep.
Like, the guy's got a hand around his waist, which is why he has to make a tough catch. Otherwise, he's running right where he should be.
Yeah.
And he makes that catch, and then he gets a call that I watched a lot of college football this weekend, and a lot of people spun balls and threw balls and did all kinds of ball-related things.
It wasn't like it got away from him either. Like, it spun in place. Ref, you can reach down and pick that up. The ball spinning versus the ball sitting there does not make a big difference. Like, stop.
And then he
got yourself a presence.
Got away with it later, and then
like the next catch he did it.
Eubanks got away with it later, and I was just like, all right,
this is so stupid.
So let's just do the Peppers things where we are
place it emphatically.
And be very, very nice about it. Let's just make that our Michigan trademark.
That, and then, do the Barry Sanders in the end zone. Just walk up and hand the ball to the ref. And no flags. No stupid, stupid flags.
But when not picking up a 15-yard penalty, he looked like the best Grant Perry he could be.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got a little bit more long speed than I thought he did.
He had one or two catches last year, but he has that post route in the slot where he bleats a guy clean and brings in another maximally extended catching radius ball, and I'm just like, this guy might be good. Like, I kind of feel like he's going to be the leading receiver this year.
Yeah, you get a bit of an Austin Carr feel from him where he's the good route runner out of the slot, great hands.
Big enough to be a impactful
like
guy.
Like 6 foot, not like just a tiny little slot bug, but He's dangerous. He really is.
Yeah, and there was that fade to Crawford that they tried when they went cover zero on like third and goal.
And both Perry and Gentry probably would have been better options on that play.
Well, I mean, Gentry is one thing because you're probably throwing a fade there. And even if he's
Gentry was going up the seam.
Really?
He beat his guy to the inside. I thought that was the money throw. I thought that was what the play was drawn up to get, was spread them out, get Gentry in the slot against a corner, and let him just be tall. Like yeah, that would have probably worked even if he didn't beat the guy to the inside, and then he got a step, and then
I honestly wasn't watching when I was watching Perry, and I was watching Perry burn his guy. I'm like, man, if they're going cover zero on you, and you've got Perry who's on like a safety or even a nickel corner, and you've got him going both ways, like, dude.
Yeah, it's funny who we lock onto that play, because I locked onto Gentry from the beginning because I wanted to see, you know, the Ent out there catch a pass. You're locked onto Perry because he's a route artisan at the goal line.
Yeah, and they're trying a fade, which is pretty much the toughest route available right there.
Yeah, especially like the corner route setup to it. Mm-hmm. It didn't leave much of an angle to put the ball in. There wasn't much room. It was going to be a tough over-the-head catch, even if it was in bounds.
I think he brought it in.
Yeah, he did. It was just not in.
So we mentioned briefly Nick Eubanks getting a downfield catch, and everybody is like, who's the wide receiver with 82? Yeah,
is that Mo Waze? Like,
it was kind of like, oh, that's very technically a tight end.
yes.
And after the game, Harbaugh did call out the tight end blocking, something that I think is going to be a bugaboo for most of the year, because they have these three really athletic guys, but they're all in their second year as a tight end. We didn't really see much from Ian Bunting. Sometimes that's like an injury thing. I mean, we saw McCraig not play early. That might be the same thing. And then
they said that was a dehydration thing. He needed an IV before the game, and then he was fine.
Oh.
Yeah. Which explains like the weird like two series absence, and then he's just in there and fine.
Was he a groomsman?
That's, you know, I don't know.
I hope not.
I could use an IV.
I mean, how much of a dick do you have to be to like schedule a wedding during football season for somebody who's on a football team?
Yeah, that's not cool.
Don't do that.
No,
that's probably not what happened. And Wheatley, I caught a couple of blocks from Wheatley that I thought were really good.
Yeah, he had one like where he comboed a guy and just kind of caved in the entire right side of the line.
And I think that he's kind of maybe one of the factors in Bouncapalooza 2017. Yeah. But
also missed some blocks.
Had some pretty bad fall offs. We'll see. I gotta do the UFR to see what I think about that. But there's been a Spadian outpouring of opinion about Tyron Wheatley's blocking in this game, so as in its high amplitude.
I didn't realize it was quite that.
Yeah, it's divisive.
Only Michigan do we get that worked up about a tight end blocking.
Well, there's probably other fan bases, but mostly Michigan. That's true. So if you are like me and you're pretty confident that this is going to be not a typical performance from Spate, and that as performances from Spate go, it was pretty much okay.
Yeah, he did not get lucky with his breaks in that one.
No, I don't think there was really anything where a receiver really helped him out either. Like, there were some good catches.
Perry once or twice.
I mean, yeah. Well, one of those was, like, not...
Oh, yeah, that was more of a pass interference setting up a tough catch.
So I feel like he's gonna be fine, everybody. Let's calm down. Let's calm down. And they put up 450 yards against a good defense.
Yeah, I mean, when it gets down to it, like, you look at the box score, and that's, you know, that's with a defensive touchdown. I mean, that came late, but, you know, it's still taking away an opportunity to acquire yards.
Right, yeah, yeah. And well, I mean, they had a couple of defensive – I mean, it's figuring out exactly, like,
how
fast
actually,
the game was is a little bit difficult.
That's true. But, yeah, I mean, I expected this Gators defense to put up more of a fight.
Yeah. I mean, especially because they come out in the third quarter and they're down 13-17, and it's like, all right, well, how is this game going to go? And Michigan goes straight down the field and scores.
Yep.
And one of the main factors in that was Spate hitting Perry a couple times on that drive.
Yeah.
So he came out of the locker room and he was like, all right, I'm dialed in now. So I'm pro Spate. You guys who are anti Spate can suck lemons. That's what I think. All right, we're going to take one more break. Well, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Defense. this is a 3-3-5. They played like I was looking at it. I'm like, the middle linebacker is really deep. And then it came into my head that when Rich Rod came in, I was watching like these coaching videos of his defense,
and the Castile defense,
and they had like three down linemen. They had two kind of burly outside linebackers, and then they had a little fast middle linebacker who is like 5 to 7 yards deep
and a human missile basically.
And I saw this and I was like, wait, what? So Michigan ran some three-man line stuff last year.
They did, but late in the year,
but they never ran like an out and out stack.
Yeah,
this game they probably put 70% of their snaps in a stack.
Yeah.
And now I know what it's supposed to
look like.
It worked
really well, yeah. So that's what that's supposed to do.
It was really interesting. So Brian Monet doesn't really get much playing time.
No.
He's in on the four-man line stuff. And the rest of the time, it's just, you know, Gary, Hurst, Winovich. And then they bring in Furbush, mm-hmm. who's always been like a very burly 230, 240, 250-pound linebacker type guy as the extra guy. And then they put that guy and then McCray. And they insert them all over the place, and they confuse the heck out of Florida, and you get guys shooting into the backfield on blocked a ton, and it's just like, oh.
Yeah. You could tell it, you know, young offensive line, young quarterback, like that was the perfect game plan for that game, bringing out a defense that they couldn't have prepared that much for.
No.
And a defense designed to just continually bring heat from different angles, even more so than Don Brown normally does. They just, you could tell they had no idea where the pressure was going to come from on any given play.
And this never got out of the submarine.
No, it sure didn't.
I
was expecting Brian Monet to log, 40, 50 snaps or something, at least 10. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought we were going to see like significant amount of Aubrey Solomon because they would need a backup nose tackle.
Yeah, they sure didn't. That was surprising. And that they were comfortable enough to play Gill extensive amount of time when McCray was out.
Yeah.
That was a guy we had not heard a thing about. He looked fine.
He did. And based on talk in spring practice, I was like, all right, well, these guys are never playing. And then he's out there starting. And I'm like, I don't think that's ever been the case where like a guy has literally not been mentioned by anybody.
And then he's just out there.
And then he's starting the first game.
Because everybody gets a mention at some point during
fall camp. Pretty much, yeah.
Like some,
like Nico Collins, who's probably going to redshirt, got a couple mentions.
Yeah.
Like offensive linemen who are definitely going to redshirt got mentions.
Yeah.
Darren Irving Bay was talked about by Greg Madison. And he's like the lock redshirt of the year.
Yes.
And nothing about Devin Gill, and then he's just out there.
We had more Donovan Jeter hype than Devin Gill hype by a lot.
Yeah. And well, he's a little dinged up, so he didn't travel.
Yeah.
We might see some Jeter, but if they're doing this 3-3-5 thing.
We're not going to see many DTs.
And the opposition gets like 30 offensive snaps or whatever.
Yeah, just completely murderated. Then.
It was crazy. And it's just kind of mind-blowing because 3-3-5 is like the ultimate underdog defense.
Yeah. And Michigan got a tackle for loss on more than 20% of Florida snaps.
And
11 TFLs on 53 plays.
It is also that.
That's unbelievable.
So the interesting, well, all of this was very interesting. But
it sure was.
One of the interesting things to me was that they were using Bush as this middle linebacker. And when I was watching these coaching films, that like they were talking about how that middle linebacker didn't have to be a big guy.
Yeah.
He could be a walk-on as long as he was like the kind of guy who would put his face in anything and anybody.
And Devin Bush, maybe almost too much sometimes. He was toeing the line a little bit, but that's definitely his thing.
Yeah, so Bush almost gets ejected on the second play from scrimmage.
And I wouldn't have been like totally shocked. Like if he had been ejected, it would have been like as long as they called the Florida one later the same way, it was like, yeah, that was kind of targeting.
It was worse than the one he got ejected for in the Iowa game last year.
Yep.
And then after the game, he's like, that's how I am. If they eject me, they eject me. And I was like, wrong answer!
No, take it easy,
answer!
Dude. We need you out there.
Seriously. Because speaking of spring practice and fall practice, I've paying off Bush 100%.
Everything we thought he was going to be and then some, really, this game.
Just some of those blitzes where he's just coming around and the quarterback is like, what is this squirrel doing in the backfield?
And then he had like, sometimes, we talked about his alignment. He's almost a quasi-safety back there every once in a while. And there was one play Florida had that looked like it was going to break big, and he made it a really impressive open field tackle on a guy with a lot of momentum in space. He did everything well.
He got there, and that's one of the reasons that you keep that guy back there.
Yeah.
Because he's got to
He's going to close quickly.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about him covering ground.
I just can't, like, there are a ton of practice reports about this, and I can't believe that nobody even... Because we heard about changes to Michigan's offense. It was like, oh, yeah, they're going to be more spread, and that paid off. There was more shotgun spread, and there was just not even a whisper of this. It blows my mind.
Yeah, we need to get some like more football wonks in as practice observers.
How can you not tell? Well, oh, God, this is even funnier now. There was one Rivals mention about how like the injury situation on the defensive line was so bad that they even played a little three-man line. You remember that, right?
I do. I read that report.
So that was not – that didn't come from
I mean
– it did not come from a coach.
They got it part, right?
Sort of, yeah. Like – Hurst is even playing some nose because of injury problems.
He's lined up as a 0-1 technique pretty much this entire game.
Wow. All right. Anyway, stop dragging people.
It's in our nature.
My favorite thing about this game was Jordan Scarlett saying that Michigan's defensive line couldn't run sideline to sideline.
Gets himself suspended so he doesn't have to live out that whole experience of, you know, having that emphatically proven false.
And Rashawn Gary made a tackle on a wide receiver screen.
Mo Hurst did too.
And Mo Hurst made a tackle on a wide receiver screen. So...
Don't throw those. It's the Peppers effect, except with freaking defensive linemen. Don't run tunnel screens against Michigan. You're going to get somebody killed.
And that just blew my mind, because there are, you can level many, many accurate criticisms of what Michigan was presenting in this game. They're young. They might bust. You know, they're not the biggest guys. Hurst's only 280.
Yeah.
You know, Winovich is only 260. And but to be, these guys can't run. It's like, what? Do you even watch film? So that was a very reassuring, stupid-ass comment.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, I mean, what are you doing? What are you thinking?
I mean, that was the same guy who talked about how, like, he passed some advice to one of the freshmen who got suspended.
Oh,
and then, like, a couple days later, it's like, yeah, you were doing that too, dude. Like, what did you learn exactly?
Well, if the advice was don't get caught, that was good advice that he didn't take himself.
Indeed.
But the three-man line, I think everybody pretty much expected to see what we did see. Winovich was relentless.
Yeah.
Got to the quarterback. Gary got shorted on stats in this game.
Yeah, he only comes up with two tackles and doesn't have any in the backfield, but he had, I think Pro Football Focus tallied him up for five pressures.
Yeah.
And he was a presence back there, and I think also probably he would have had a sack if Felipe Franks didn't just bail on one play.
I don't think
he tripped, but it was the best thing that could have ever happened to him on that play.
It was.
It was otherwise going to end in death.
I mean, Gary basically looked like I wanted him to look.
Yes.
And he was the guy mostly going up against Martez Ivy, who's an all SEC caliber tackle.
Yes.
So I think all systems are go for those guys. And then the secondary, for one, were there any busts?
Not that I can remember, no.
I mean, there were probably at least one or two that were irrelevant because someone was dying in the backfield.
Yes. But that's, you know, that's one of the good things about having a great defensive front is you get away with mistakes.
But you didn't see many. You didn't see anything like the black touchdown for Michigan where there's
no.
A guy who's just screamingly wide open.
Yeah.
And Michigan had a number of guys on offense screamingly wide open in this game. But whenever Florida made a downfield play, there was a guy hip to hip,
yeah,
or a step behind.
Yeah, Lavert Hill might not have gotten his head around on a couple of plays, but he was in position to make a play if he had recognized that the ball was in the air a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I mean, the first hit, like, on Hill on the first drive, I thought was just an offense win situation.
Yeah.
Like, he's in very good position, but he has no play on that ball. Like, if there's a criticism you can level about that coverage, it's like he didn't get him into the sideline.
Yeah.
But other than that, I thought, okay, that's just an offense win. The second one was a little bit of a downer.
Yeah, he had some time to get around on that one.
Because you can't watch
and that. Probably picks it off if he does.
Well, you can't watch that play and not think, you know, that does not happen to Jordan Lewis.
Yeah.
Because Jordan Lewis would read that the wide receiver is slowing up and at least have a play on the ball.
Yeah, he was a natural at making that happen.
And he kind of ran by him like Clark, when he was a junior, did that against Indiana a couple times. And it is kind of unfortunate that you get back-shouldered. But these days, you got to be, like, that's got to be a prime directive for any cornerback is learn how to defend that pass.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just going to happen to you.
CeCe Denzel Ward.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, because that's, I mean, sometimes that's just a read the quarterback's making depending on what positions his receiver's in, and there's really no way of winning that if they throw it right.
But, you know, we saw a pretty good pass breakup from Brandon Watson, who was in phase.
That was emphatic.
It was.
He swatted that.
And you know, the question with Watson is, can he run with guys?
That time he got down the sideline with them.
That looks like pretty good.
Yeah.
And we saw a couple of David Long coverages where he's in excellent position, but the throw's not good enough so that he gets tested where he's going to make that count.
Yeah.
So I'm not, like, over the moon about the cornerback situation yet, but I thought it was a pretty good start.
Yeah, encouraging first game. Tough to figure out, especially since Florida had their best receivers suspended, what the degree of difficulty was there. But that Tyree Cleveland dude
Cleveland,
was legit.
Yeah, Cleveland's legit.
And they did a pretty good job of limiting him to circus catches.
Yeah, there were a couple of, like, scramble out, improvise, throw it up high, which is not really something that you can adequately defend against.
No, if he's leaping up like that, that's just going to happen.
So Josh Metellus, I think he now... I think he has to, like, write a condolence letter to the mom of that receiver that was trying to block him on the Franks fumble.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. I don't think I've seen a block that comprehensively defeated by a safety.
Yeah. That was mean.
Which mean old Josh Metellus. Is that, that can't be his prospector name.
No, that's, yeah. We'll come up with something better.
Well, or eventually. Worse. And, you know, Metellus, he also had a tackle on a flare that I thought was going to break for a first down, and he was able to get out there. So he looks...
He covers a lot of ground. He really
athletically
does.
Up to it. He looks mean. Like, I think he's a find. And then Cleek Hudson.
Yeah.
Cleek Hudson looked awesome.
He looked really, really good. Just exactly what we expected in terms of, like, you take that physical and athletic package and put him in this defense, especially with the stack that they came out in. Just fire that dude in the backfield. You basically just got two heat-seeking missiles between him and Bush.
Yeah, he had a couple of good blitzes in there. It's one particular run play that Michigan was kind of stringing out to the sideline, and then he came up and just... That was it.
He ends plays pretty emphatically.
And well, we didn't really get to see him in coverage at all, but so far so good for basically everybody on the defense. Is there one person who you would think is even a little disappointing?
No, nobody that comes to mind. We haven't even mentioned Tyreek Cannell, and I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, he had a couple of good tackles where he came up and he was securing a...
He had 1.5 tackles for loss. He was in on the party.
Yeah. And when we talk about no busts... That goes back to Tyreek Cannell most of all.
Yeah, directing that secondary, making sure everybody's in the right spot. And what carried over from the spring is that we did not see the wild hand waving.
Yeah.
Guys making last-minute flips. Like, they were in position when Florida was set every time.
There were maybe a couple of times when there was a little bit of pointing and, like, you do this kind of thing. But
when you're starting, you know, two first-year corners, a first-year starter at safety, like, that's really impressive to not have anything remotely like the Florida bus, that's for sure.
And I talked about this in the spring preview where they want these three safeties to be as interchangeable as possible.
Yeah.
We saw Hudson end up as a free safety.
Yes.
We saw Cannell end up as a slot corner when he got a pass breakup. Mm-hmm. We saw Metellus play both those roles. They are going to keep rotating those guys through and do what they did with Peppers last year, where it's like, yeah, that guy might be your deep safety.
And that makes it so much... Your defense is so much less susceptible to pre-snap motion messing with you at that point. Yeah. It just takes away... It's pretty much everything that Michigan's offense tries to do to other defenses is something that defense does a great job of avoiding.
Yeah.
Because... You can adjust without having to scramble around like crazy before a snap.
So after the game, Spate said, "I want to kiss Don Brown on the forehead," and I think that is a universal opinion amongst Michigan fans.
Absolutely, I might even go for the lips at this point, but then I would die.
You can't touch the mustache.
No. I'd incinerate from just the power of the mustache touching me.
This is a terrible idea. don't do that.
No, don't worry.
We need you around.
This is why Adam covers the pressers.
Because you might kiss.
Because I might kiss Don Brown and then die. They're definitely not letting me in now.
Ace Anbedor, a very professional reporter.
Always.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk special teams and a little feelings ball.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Everyone has their own definition of true wealth, and it's our job to help them understand what the definition is for them. We look at everything from college to retirement and lifestyle planning, as far as estate planning and building their own legacy, helping them understand what their goals are, and then backing in from there.
Peak Wealth Management founder Nick Hopwood has been a part of the MGO blog community from almost the very beginning. If you've put in the work to reach that point in your career, it's probably time to talk to him about your financial future. Stop by his office in Plymouth or visit peakwm.com/MGOblog.
Special teams is, I guess it can't be close to a best case scenario, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, we had like a Quinn Nordin Heisman campaign going there for a little bit. Yeah. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, and so he's 4-4 to start his career, and then he has a miss from 52.
And like barely missed that one.
Yeah,
that was close to the right upright.
Just outside, and then he misses a 32 yards, and we're like, oh, come on, man. But before that, he hits field goals of 55 yards and 50 yards. He's the first Michigan kicker to ever do that in a game, hit 250-plus field goals. He's tied for third all-time in most 50-yard-plus makes already.
I get the feeling he'll move up that list.
Which is that's quite a thing.
That's a good place to be after one game.
And, I mean, looked like a guy who's just going to be there for 4 years kicking it.
Yeah, I was impressed by, that first 55-yarder, it barely clears the bar.
Yeah.
But he got it up so high over the line that was like, usually with 50 yarders, you're concerned about those getting blocked. That was never going to get blocked unless somebody blew a blocking assignment.
Yeah, I was surprised by that because when it was up there and when it went through, I thought it was clearly through.
Yeah, like and then they show the back replay. It's like, ooh, that was close.
That would have been good from 55.
Yep.
not quite the spring game one, but
no. But we know he can do that, so that makes that field goal. I mean, I assume that was on a slightly different trajectory.
I mean, that's just a hell of a debut where you know, it's like, all right, well, we got a punt. It's like, why is the kicker out there? All right, so it's going to be one of those quick kicks. And he's like, nope. And hello, Quinn Nordin. I don't think there's a possible sleepover joke that hasn't been made.
Right? Yeah, we definitely run the gamut on those at this point.
But
it was worth it.
And then the other kind of revelation, I think, was Donovan Peoples-Jones as a punt returner.
Yeah, both in terms of, like, he nearly broke a couple, and he fielded everything. And that is one thing we were concerned about.
Yeah, he fielded
about.
Literally everything.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we were deeply concerned about that as the big thing that we would lose without Peppers is somebody who can come up and field and save that hidden yardage that Peppers did, like, by whole football fields over the course of a season.
I mean, this guy was, this punter was kind of an interesting test because he's just bombing it.
He was crushing them.
So, like, he's got time to make these catches, and it's not like you're rushing up and trying to catch like a 38-yarder.
Yeah.
But I was impressed with the security of what he was doing. Like, I didn't feel like there were going to be bobbles.
No.
And you don't feel like there are until there are.
True.
But
we have a lot of evidence from high school that he's pretty good at this.
And his decision when he got the bouncing one was very good. Like, you could see him position himself so that if the ball bounced like a football usually does, mm-hmm. that he would be in a good spot to grab it.
And if it did something funky,
he would not be unduly in the way. And then, like, man, there were two moments during that game where I thought he was going to break it for a touchdown.
Yep. He's, you know, an ankle away.
Yep. So
we'll see that before too long, I think.
I do, too. So that's a pretty much a best-case scenario for punt returns.
Yes.
Michigan did not have a kickoff return because of that same guy.
Eddie Pinheiro. No, it was their kicker. It was their place kicker who was, 4 for 4 on touchbacks. And I'm not sure any of them even touched in the end zone.
They put Crawford and Hudson back on kickoffs, which is interesting. Not that that.
I will be excited to see Kalik Hudson just violently return a kickoff at some point. It's going to be a different style from most kickoff returners you see. He might seek out contact.
I really want Michigan to have a tradition of, like, technically linebackers who also return kicks. The downer was the block punt.
Yeah, not great, especially given the sequence of events that led up to it. It seemed pretty catastrophic.
Yeah, that was pretty much the cats and dogs living together moment of the day.
Yeah, it really was. That was a low moment. But
and it wasn't Brad Robbins. It was Will Hart.
Yeah.
So
that was a little surprising.
Yeah, after all the talk, yeah.
Especially since, I mean, I guess he put both his other punts inside the 20, so he was decent.
Yeah, both his other punts.
Yeah.
Weird game.
Yeah.
Florida, 3 punts.
Yeah, very strange.
And Ambry Thomas both caused and recovered a fumble.
Fantastic rip on that play.
And, I mean, I was like, hey, he can't play. He's too skinny. I'm like, all right, maybe. Maybe,
yeah,
maybe.
That was for you, Brian.
What? These people aren't doing things just to show me up. Otherwise,
I mean, maybe winning the football game was also a bit of an incentive. Yeah, I don't know.
My predictions would be much worse if that was the case.
Yeah. It's like, it's going to be 2014 every year forever.
Yeah. Feelings ball section of our podcast. They showed, I think, excellent restraint with the burning of the red shirts.
Yeah.
Like, apparently the participation chart didn't have Aubrey Solomon and didn't have Josh Ross.
Yeah, and definitely saw Solomon out there in the last later possessions.
Yeah, and so he's also a duh. So the Black,
yeah,
Peoples-Jones, and Solomon are guys who were never going to redshirt, never should redshirt.
Yeah.
And they had a number of guys who was like, these guys probably will play, they probably should play, and that's Ambry Thomas and some other guys.
Quiddy Paye got out there.
Paye, yes. And there were only like two that were like, what's going on there? And that was Andrew Stuber.
Yeah.
Who I feel might come down with some sort of terrible.
He's got a back thing.
He's got a hangnail or something.
Yeah.
Midseason. But if he's the guy who's out there burning his red shirt at right tackle, do you think they're keeping him warm for in case Elizio doesn't come through?
I mean, considering how Elizio played, that would not be surprising.
Like, yeah, he's not exactly locking it down yet.
No. I mean, he was rough in pass protection. I don't think he was great in the run game either.
Yeah.
And, you know, Stuber's at the disadvantage of he wasn't an early enrollee, which at that point, if you're a true freshman offensive lineman and you're starting game one and you got there a month ago, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And right tackle is a problem already, but that would have been probably the worst case scenario. But if give him a couple weeks, a few weeks.
And you do have a nice long flight path towards.
Yeah, the schedule sets up nicely for developing young players at this point.
Cause, yeah.
I mean, Cincinnati's god-awful. God-awful.
Yes, they are.
And Air Force just turns over so much that they'll be annoying, but I'm not sure they're going to be that much of a threat.
And the other weird one was Benjamin St. Juice, who we hadn't heard anything about during fall practice. That one even makes a little bit of sense because you saw like, a couple of guys get dinged up, Long went out for a little bit.
And yeah, there's like, just not much depth at corner.
There isn't.
And also, if they hit on St. Juice, that guy will be in the NFL after 4 years because he's a 6'3 corner with NFL agility.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's another guy who you might see come down with a.
That's true. He's also a
whooping cough or something.
Pretty raw Canadian who could maybe use that fifth year.
So. Playing the HMS Poutine Machine.
Yep.
That was my line. It's a good line.
It was worth a revisit.
You don't believe that at all.
Yeah, I really sold that.
The disrespect is radiating off of you.
I blame the hangover.
Start shining bright lights in your eyes.
I have sunglasses here for that very reason. And I anticipated that move.
So we do have our feelings ball to talk about. And you know, you're going into this game, and I was confident about this game.
So was I.
But at the same time, when they're kicking off and this food guy's rolling on the field, I'm like, oh, what? This don't suck. And like, that's like your opinion about like the whole team.
Yeah, and that's like it was the immediate reminder that like this is still game one and we haven't seen this team yet, and I don't know who this guy is.
Right,
and that's the first guy I saw. So that was a bit of a jolt. Just like, oh right, this could still go really horribly wrong.
Right, I'm like, oh, what happened to Seychelles? Like, what's going on? And then like, McCray isn't even out there. I'm like, what happened to McCray? What's going on?
Yeah, and then you have that moment where it looks like Bush might get kicked out and McCray hasn't been on the field yet. And it's like, we might not have like a middle of the defense here. This could be a problem.
And then they go down and they get a field goal immediately. Mm-hmm. Things look pretty good for the next quarter and a half. And then the clown show portion of our program. And then you're like, all right, well, this is going to go one of two directions. And it went in the Harbaugh direction.
Yeah, it went emphatically in the Harbaugh direction.
And God, that feels good.
Yeah.
What that feels like is it feels like Michigan becoming capital M Michigan again. And again is a weird, like, what are we going back here? Are we going back to Carr? Probably not. We're talking about like Bo.
Yeah, for just every year, that's a team that you got to look out for on a national level.
Yeah. And this was going to be like the year where it's like, well, this could be like the hiccup year.
Yeah.
And now it really feels like, I mean, they have one of their like four games against teams that was going to be a single-digit spread out of the way.
Yeah.
They have a W and an emphatic one.
Despite a lot of the breaks not going their way.
Yeah. And, I mean, they win that game by 16 points. They cover by 11. And now it's like, all right, let's refine and get to that point where, you know, you're going into Penn State and you're like, all right, I feel we can do this.
Yeah, it was just the fashion that they won that game in, too, where, first of all, you've got guys on the Florida side talking about after the game about how they were just physically overwhelmed, which, considering how much Michigan turned over, especially on the offensive line, is like, that says a lot. And then also, schematically, I mean, we've already talked in detail about the stack getting broken out of nowhere and having that be a wonderful addition to this defense, incredibly. And then on offense, you could see Pep Hamilton's influence pretty immediately with a lot of pre-snap motion, some empty sets. And then I loved that drive where they went tempo on the 4th-and-1, mauled Florida, and then just kept going with it. We didn't see that much of that before.
No.
Both the just immediate 4th-and-1, that had to just be an automatic, we're just doing this. If we're in that situation, that was an immediate, everybody just pushed forward. I loved the blocking scheme of that, which was just shove. We'll get a yard. Then to go hurry up after that, even with an incomplete pass in there, I think, and lock some guys that Florida didn't want on the field. The play calling, the black touchdown was something where they saw that Florida's senior safety went out and was replaced by a freshman, and they ran a play designed to make that guy make a decision, and he made the wrong one.
Yeah.
So it just felt like not only was Michigan the better football team, they were by far the better coach team.
Yeah, and this is something that we talked about on the season preview podcast.
Yeah, in an interesting light, you know, the context was a little strange.
I mean, I absolutely meant it. I absolutely meant that, like, I thought that the shark thing was boded very unwell for Florida fans.
It really did.
And I continue to feel that. And just the way that they approached this game, they just talked a bunch of crap and then
didn't even seem prepared for the team that they played. Yeah. Nice job, guys.
Yep. Feel bad for Spencer, though.
Yeah.
Because like, they're in the same situation we were, like, when Hoke was happening. Like, that just complete despair that you know your offense is going to be miserable.
Yeah, and you're just watching a team light a bunch of talent on fire. Because it's not like they don't have good players.
And, you know, like, I've watched teams with good offenses and terrible defenses, and I've watched teams with good defenses and terrible offenses, and God, is the second one of those so much worse.
Yeah, because I mean, you're just hoping to win via sludge fart at that point, and it's no fun. It's no fun at all.
No.
We've been through it. We did Rich Rod and then Hoke back to back. We saw both sides of that coin. The second side sucked.
So the guy keeps winning like division titles, but if I was Florida, I would have fired him on the tarmac yesterday, and I would have hired Jeff Brohm.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Looking frisky already, Purdue.
Frisky. Great hire for Purdue. Great hire. All right, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk with Jamie Mack about things.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
All right, before we talk to Jamie, we've been directed to talk about hummus because we are a very organized and ad-friendly podcast. What I will tell you is that their most hummusy hummus, they're like hummusy hummus, the one that's just regular hummus.
Just hummus, period.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's like a little sweet. It's a little spicy. You put it on whatever you want, and it's like, this is some hummus, man. It's good.
Yeah, we were using spoons last week. That was fine.
Well, it's always better when you've got some sort of starch.
Certainly.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, hummus is good.
Lantana hummus is good. Yes. All other hummuses are terrible.
All other hummus is beneath us.
Is made from kittens instead of chickpeas, which is what hummus is supposed to be made from, or beets.
Lantana, don't eat kittens.
We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing great. I'm just trying to not be a tight end in an illegal formation that the referee can't see.
Oh, man. So I'm going to do what Seth did to me. Talk about hummus.
Oh, well, you know, I don't really like it as a tailgate snack because it gets kind of hot.
That's not what you're supposed
off-brand,
to say.
Off-brand.
Off-brand. What you're supposed to say is eat Lantana hummus because it's not made of kittens.
Yeah, sure.
How did you not know that? Come on, Jamie.
I didn't know.
You got to anticipate.
Is that kind of like, is that our sponsor? Did I just ruin
our sponsor? That is our sponsor. Well, although we would be saying the same thing.
I'm going to buy a bunch of it and make it the cornerstone of our tailgate this week.
Thank
because
you.
I'm in the minority there.
We would be saying the same things about Lantana Hummus if they were not our sponsor.
Absolutely.
Because it's just that good. All right, let's talk some football, Jamie.
You got it. Where do you guys want to start?
Let's start with this one. Let's start with Maryland 51, Texas 41.
Wow.
What the hell?
Yeah, what a great, what a crazy game. It was the first game of the day at noon. And, you know, we've been waiting for college football all offseason for months. And this just had everything. The two teams missed four field goals. They missed two-point conversions. There were four return TDs. The teams exchanged blocked field goal return TDs at one point in the second half. Both teams' first passes of the games were picked off. So there was a point in the game where the only two passes thrown were interceptions. And in the end, it was Maryland's first road win against a Power 5 team since 2015 when they beat Rutgers.
That doesn't count.
That doesn't really count. And it snapped a 17-game road losing streak against ranked opponents. It was the second longest drought in the country going into the game in that. Yeah.
So, I mean, DJ Durkin starts Piggy, and I'm like, this is a terrible decision. And, like, he's not Denard Robinson, but that's the closest I've seen to the Denard Robinson Michigan offense since his departure. Well, since Rich Rudd's departure, actually.
Yeah.
And, like, they have those two really quick backs on the outside, and they ran a lot of zone read, and Piggy was enough of a run threat that when he decided to check up and throw, the safeties were just out of the picture. And I was like, well, yeah, maybe they have something here.
He averaged almost 15 yards an attempt.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That was what I saw, too, when I pulled that up.
Yeah. Conley has already done a write-up on this game, and his stat that he threw out there was Maryland was 5-for-6 on passes of 20 yards or more for like 176 yards.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Denard used to do to people, though. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, if he put it up, there was going to be someone screamingly wide open.
Yeah. They took a 21-7 lead and made it a 28-7 lead just because they just found kind of one of those Denard passes where everybody sucked in on a run, and he was just wide. The receiver was just so wide open. I mean, it was an easy throw for him to make. Unfortunately, he didn't make it out of the game alive. He got injured and was carted off.
Yeah.
So they had to go with Kasim Hill, who is pretty much the cornerstone recruit of this class that Durkin brought in. And it's a top 25 class. A lot of people say it's the best recruiting class in Maryland history. He almost won the job. He came very close to winning the job. So I kind of thought he should have won the job because, I mean, he knows how to finish runs. He's bigger than Pegerman. We saw Piggy last year, right?
And, yeah.
And
he was
a clear downgrade. It was a clear downgrade from Perry Hills. So I was sort of, you know, leery about it, and it started off really poorly. He threw a pick six on his first pass.
But he came back from that, and was like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the problem for Maryland is they had a lot of injuries on defense in this game. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how long those guys are going to be out, but they had, like, I think, four guys leave this game.
Oh, that's
yeah, cool. Well, their big defensive tackle left the game.
Yeah, and so did Annie Bonham. Whatever.
Yeah, one of their defensive backs, yeah.
No, he's their defensive end. He's their sacks and tackles for loss guy on the weak side.
I think, didn't Antoine Richardson leave the game, too?
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about, the DB. Yeah, he got carted off.
So, like, can they really take those hits with not that much talent? I mean, yeah. I do think this obviously greatly improves their outlook from a team that was hoping to get to a bowl to a team that's hoping to get to, like, the Outback Bowl.
Yeah, hoping to get a bowl. The Vegas set their over-under at wins at 3.5.
What?
Yeah, they were 3.5.
Man,
that's,
I wish I bet and had known that.
Yeah.
Seriously, that is way too low for a guy. Like, they've got some dudes on their defense. And
yeah.
And some intriguing guys on offense,
yeah,
too.
They do.
Well, a good,
like,
coordinator.
DJ Moore can play. Like, that is...
Yeah, that dude's good. I like Walt Bell managed to scheme around an entire offensive line last year and produce a top 10 running game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he also schemed around the quarterback situation the year before that was just so turnover prone, and he turned him into a non-turnover prone team last year.
Yeah, I think he's 3.5 was way too low for them heading into the season.
Seriously.
I'm shocked to hear.
Yeah. Well, the book on them coming in was that they could be improved, but their schedule would be too tough. You know, I don't think anybody thinks that they're going to beat Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State, but they also play at Wisconsin, Northwestern. They also play at Minnesota.
But they get Rutgers and they get Michigan State, right? So
yeah,
that's two.
Yeah. Well, and of course, they were 18-point underdogs against Texas. I don't think anybody thought they'd win.
Yeah.
But their offensive explosion really shouldn't surprise people who followed the Draftageddon. I mean, you guys picked all their offensive stars that did well in the game on Saturday. I mean, each one of those guys, you know, DJ Moore had a huge game. Johnson had a huge game. I mean, when they cut it to three, Texas, after a big punt return, Johnson had a 42-yard kickoff, a 62-yard kickoff return, rather, and then he finished the drive with a 40-yard run. I mean, he was a stud last year.
Yeah, and that moment in the game really felt like when it was like, okay, this might happen.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It kind of felt like, okay, this is when Maryland folds up and goes mm-hmm. away. And instead, they get those two huge plays from Johnson, and it was off and running.
Yeah. I thought the surprising thing of the game was just Maryland's run defense. You know, this was 99th in against the run last year, and they had a six-game stretch in Big Ten play where they, on average, allowed over 300 yards rushing. And Texas couldn't run the ball all game. Now, granted, they fell behind because they were passing a lot, but they didn't really abandon the run wholly. And, I mean, that itself was just sort of strange. I mean, watching Maryland just get gashed every conference game last year practically, and they were all over the ball.
All right, moving on to the other feel-good Big Ten story of the week, even though it was a loss. Louisville 35, Purdue 28, and Purdue got hosed in this game by the referees.
Oh, yeah.
Just some targeting calls that were blitheringly bad. Their huge nose tackle got booted out on a face mask to shoulder hit.
Oh, yeah.
And then
that was terrible.
Louisville fumbled in the end zone for a touchback, and they reviewed it, and they still called it erroneously a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that's the final margin in this game. Oof. But this is, I mean, for Purdue hang in this game, to almost win this game in you know, day one of Jeff Brohm's coaching career at West Lafayette is, I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting this. And I loved their hire.
It was a great hire, but I just thought this team did not have nearly enough talent to certainly not to hang with Louisville.
No, and they switched quarterbacks, and the guy obviously who's the backup has a lot of arm talent, but
it's not together yet.
Yeah,
he averaged 3.8 yards an attempt.
Like, he's just like not all there yet.
But Blau's still just turnover prone. I mean, he got pulled because of the two picks.
But like, hey man, they were in this game, and they deserve to be in it.
They were, and I think to Purdue's credit, you know, when they fell behind 25-21 in the fourth quarter, they came back and scored. Elridge, I think the backup quarterback, drove him right down the field and scored a touchdown. Kind of like the Maryland game where it was that we just spoke about, where it's like, oh, there's the moment.
It's Sindelar.
They're going to collapse.
The guy's
Sindelar, name. That's right. But then they came back and scored that touchdown. That I thought was pretty important. And I think that kind of bodes well for the rest of the, well, not just for the season. I don't know if they're going to win any games, but I mean, I think that just bodes well for the overall direction of his tenure. And we'll get into Indiana later, but you know, the knee-jerk reaction is, you know, you're pretty excited about Purdue's coaching situation, and you're maybe not as excited about Indiana's coaching situation all of a sudden. So,
yep. Do we have one more feel good Big Ten story in here?
Illinois edged out Ball State.
That's not what I was going to go with, but let's go with it.
Let's do it.
This was a football game that happened, Jamie. I don't know anything else about it.
Yeah.
I didn't watch this one, that's for sure.
I know that the Illinois people I follow on Twitter were not happy.
No. Well, I mean, it was the third quarter was a total disaster for them. They had three and outs in the third quarter for a total of negative 10 yards. And meanwhile, Ball State had a 15-play 75-yard touchdown drive and a 13-play 77-yard touchdown drive during the same quarter, and that gave them the 21-16 lead going into the fourth. Illinois wins this game only because Mike Dudick fields a punt on a bounce, and he's got great momentum, so it's a great call to field it, and he just tore it up for 52 yards deep into Ball State territory. Malik Turner had a big catch a play or two later to get them down on the goal line, and boom, they go ahead with like 2.5 minutes to go. I mean, they were. I thought they were going to lose the game.
Well, if any one of us trusted Mike Dudek's knees, those would have been the two guys who were picked in draft to get in off Illinois.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, I mean, that's great. That's a great story for that guy because he was a really great receiver as a freshman, very polished. I got angry watching the Illinois Iowa game because he was just so much better than all of Iowa's receivers. And so, anyway, that's neither here nor there. The other field goal story I was going to talk about is Rutgers looking like a football team for upwards of a quarter.
Hey.
Yeah.
They lose to Washington 30-14, but hey, they look like a football team for upwards of a quarter.
Yeah, they played pretty solid. You know, frankly, Washington had to kind of dominate on special teams to get some separation. They had a 61-yard punt return touchdown. They pinned Rutgers twice within the two in the second half, and they made their field goal while Rutgers missed theirs. And special teams was the difference. Of course, you probably didn't watch it. It was on Friday night, but in the second half, when Rutgers still was leading, or I'm sorry, it was 10-7. They were still down 10-7. They punted on 4th-and-1 at the Washington 44, and then on the ensuing drive, Washington looked like last year's Huskies. Mm. Scored an easy touchdown, 10 plays, 83 yards, and made it 17-7. Now, I mean, if you're Rutgers, don't you have to go for it there?
Yeah, you're Rutgers. Just go all out.
Seriously. Yeah. Especially at home when there's like hot tubs and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Those hot tub pictures were amazing.
I don't want to know what that water was like. I really don't. There's going to be some new super bug that is coming out of Piscataway.
Those were the most Jersey things I've ever seen.
It really was.
It's like if the Sopranos got distilled down to like Everclear.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've already talked about Illinois, Purdue, and Rutgers, and I think everybody should know because sometimes people don't look at the schedules of the teams Michigan doesn't play, although Michigan plays two of those teams. But all three of those teams play each other this year.
But that doesn't
We're going to get a true round robin for the bottom of the Big
but
Ten.
It's not anymore because it's like these aren't the worst teams in the Big Ten.
They aren't?
Well, not all of them.
I would like to put forth one other team.
Okay. Michigan State 35,
yeah,
Bowling
Green 10.
Yeah,
there we go.
Okay.
So this is like a 7-3 game deep into the first half.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And Bowling Green missed so many chances to just put a bomb on Michigan State.
Just guys running wide open. One of them is just a hideous drop. The other two are like misses.
Yeah, bad misses.
And you're just looking at, like, they're not supposed to, like, hit all of those, right? Like, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, but their quarterback goes 10-31, and I bet, like, he could have gone 20-31 against the exact same coverages like 200 more yards tacked onto it.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about the bombs. He missed a lot of other throws that I thought a lot of other quarterbacks would have made.
Yeah,
I mean,
he just wasn't very good.
And this wasn't a good team. This is one of the worst teams in the MAC last year, and they're really young this year. People don't have any expectations for BG down here at all this year. So.
Yeah, they're now a couple years separated from Dino Babers.
Yeah, they were.
Oh yeah,
I looked up their S&P stuff.
Wasn't pretty.
No, they were triple digits in almost everything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, and not even like the good triple digits where you're like 103rd. They were like 119th. Like getting down to it.
When you're starting to like try to think of how many teams there even are in Division One.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, getting back to those big bombs, I think it's worth noting that a different Michigan State DB was burned on each of those.
Yeah, I definitely noted that.
Yeah.
Their safeties still look just awful. I mean, I guess it's not surprising considering those guys were the backup safeties and sometimes rotating in last year. But, man, it doesn't look like they've progressed.
Lewerke looked all right, though. Like, he looked solid.
He had a solid game. Yeah.
He was their leading rusher.
That's true.
A MAC team. Against a MAC team.
With how many yards?
And there was
69.
Nice.
On 8 carries. Yeah, L.J. Scott gets held.
Most of those were scrambles. I mean, they had a couple of those, you know, kind of designed quarterback run, but there were some pretty big scrambles that he peeled off.
L.J. Scott couldn't even crack 3 yards a carry.
No.
That's
like Madre London's their most productive back in this game, and that's not how they want that to go normally.
No. Well, it's interesting because, this is the worst team in the world for Michigan State to test the offensive line against. And that's the thing that really stands out to me where I'm like, okay, you got Cole Chewins, who's 280, listed at 280.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know there's, like, some inflation there, right?
Yeah. That's how rosters work.
Nobody gets listed at 280 if they're an offensive tackle.
No.
Right. And that's not honest. That's just... Because if he's actually 280, you list him at 290.
Yes.
Well, and their other tackle, Luke Campbell, you know, he was kind of like the spring legend. Like, oh, look, Luke Campbell, he's rising the depth chart. It's like, there's nobody else to rise against on the depth chart. I mean, good job. He beat out Dennis Finley, who can barely walk.
Yeah.
So they still have trouble, I think, in the trenches.
You know who they have?
Yeah, they only had one. They They have Western Michigan.
They do.
Oh.
A very feisty Western Michigan who went toe-to-toe with USC.
They put a real scare into them
for like 55 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, it could be a really interesting homestand here with Western Michigan, Notre Dame, and Iowa all coming to East Lansing before the end of September. It could get really testy.
I'm feeling 1-3.
I'm going to be watching a lot of Spartan football over the next month.
I'm really feeling it.
Yep.
Yeah. They are so young. Remember, they played 9 freshmen, true freshmen last year. A couple of them actually aren't even on the team anymore. Good job. But they played 18 combined true freshmen and redshirt freshmen on Saturday, and it was not one of those bench-emptying things, you know, late in the game. A lot of these guys were in the rotation from the jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, their defensive stat box goes on for a very long time because they were just throwing anybody in there, it looks like.
Yeah, which is a lot like last year.
Yeah, sure is.
You know, anybody they thought they could play, let's give them a shot.
And one of those walk-ons at defensive end did start and looked like a walk-on.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So
the Willikas kid.
Again, yeah, wow.
We're just going to do this one dumb joke Ace made me do. Penn State 52, Akron zip. Ha ha.
You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah, that's terrible. Moving on, Minnesota 17, Buffalo 7. That seems to bode unwell for the Golden Gophers in their first year of rowing the boat.
No, yeah. The game was 14-7 after one quarter, Minnesota, and it stayed that way until a really late field goal in the fourth quarter finally pushed the Gophers up by multiple scores.
Yeah, this is a fugly box score.
Man,
yeah.
Neither Brooks nor Smith broke 4 yards of tackle against Buffalo.
No. Buffalo was 124th against the run last year, and they allowed a school record amount of yards on the ground. And Smith and Brooks, on 41 carries, only combined for 3.5 yards per rush.
So that offensive line has just got to be a disaster zone.
Yeah, must be. And they lost their line coach too.
Grover's
not there anymore. He's a quality coach.
That is right. And this is also a team that, of course, fired Tracy Clays last year. Mm-hmm. Didn't really have much of a recruiting class. Like, a lot of this recruiting class is Western Michigan's recruiting class.
Yeah, he flipped a couple guys.
And, you know, you have that kill uncertainty, you have the Tracy Clays year.
And it's a whole player boycott thing.
Yeah, it feels like this is going to be a rough, rough year for the Gophers.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Real quickly, you know, they play, just to show you kind of how rough it might be, they play Oregon State this week. Now, granted, it's in Corvallis, and everybody's seen how bad Oregon State's looked in two games because they played in week half or whatever.
Yeah.
Oregon State is right now a 2-point favorite.
Oof. Okay, well, they're both in the running for the worst Power 5 team this year, I believe.
All right.
Wisconsin 59, Utah State 10. This was momentarily interesting because Utah State actually took a 10-0 lead before dying in a hole. Is there anything on this game to talk about, or can we just flip through it?
No. Once Wisconsin got rolling, they scored on six. They scored touchdowns on 6 of their 7 second-half drives, so...
Iowa 24, Wyoming 3. Wyoming came in with a heavily hyped quarterback in Josh Allen and couldn't really do anything at all. Iowa looked exactly like Iowa in every way imaginable, despite getting rid of Greg Davis, but it was good enough. Like, Vandenberg came back. I thought he looked good. I actually liked their quarterback. He didn't have a good statistical day, but I thought he only
threw the ball 15 times. He was pretty efficient.
So Iowa.
Yeah, he didn't have a completion until well into the second quarter.
My goodness.
I thought there were plays that he was getting close to making, but got some deflections and drops and stuff like that. I think they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sophomore. That tight end Noah Fant is a sophomore. I mean, you know, the two of them, because like you say, total Iowa, they know how to use these tight ends. Like, we're going to be talking about that combination probably for a good couple years.
They only threw the ball to three people.
Yeah. Yards per play was so Iowa, right? 4.7 Iowa, 3.3 Wyoming. That's pretty much them every game.
That's an Iowa game right there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have some dudes on defense. Like, Jewel looked really good. Like,
he was great. Jewel.
I like that dude Ben Neiman, their space backer.
So those two guys, their outside linebackers last year, didn't grade out well at Pro Football Focus at all, but they look pretty good in this game.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Like, maybe they can go from like zero-ish to up to like plus 10, and then that's a hell of a front seven.
Yeah, because they've got some guys in that line.
Yeah.
Especially now that Epinesa's seeing the field early too, and that's like a big-time five-star for them.
Yeah, I mean, they have options at defensive end, I think.
Yeah, Nelson's good. Yeah. They've got some players.
So
Wyoming couldn't run the ball at all against them. And they stuffed them on a fourth and one and a third and one. I mean, the front seven just was really good.
Like, if Iowa can figure out how to throw the ball just a little bit, I would...
Maybe to more than three people.
Well, even if you can throw it to three people, throw it to three people. But,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I kind of like them before the season, and I kind of feel like they're going to give Wisconsin all they want in that race.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, I think one thing on Saturday that really stood out is, you know, they were replacing a pair of really good corners in Desmond King and Greg Maben. And the new corner, Joshua Jackson, had a really good game. He had a great pass breakup in the end zone.
Well, Andrew Gumba was suspended, so this wasn't even like, although he might get one of the pips.
Yeah, quite possibly.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm high on Iowa, like, not like 11-1 high, but like, they can get some stuff done this year.
Yeah, I have to avoid the Iowa State trap next week.
We'll move on to Ohio State 49, Indiana 21 in an Indiana classic game where
they were right there until they really weren't.
Yeah. I remember there was like one against Michigan State like that where they were up two in the fourth quarter and they somehow lost by like 23 points or something.
Yeah. Or last year against Penn State when they were winning most of the game and they somehow lost by 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, Indiana fans have seen this game before.
Yes. What they haven't seen is the halftime adjustments go so harshly against them.
Welcome to life with Mike DeBoer.
So,
well, luckily I'm a dual Michigan Indiana fan, so I was prepared for that. I was prepped. The lack of counterpunching was very familiar, and once what worked for Indiana was taken away, nothing worked, and they had no second punch.
There was also just a bizarre series in the first half where they decided to insert Peyton Ramsey, the like redshirt freshman backup, Rams, when Lake Owl is dealing.
Yeah.
And it's just like you can't light a possession on fire when you're playing Ohio State.
Yeah, well now Ace, that insertion was important because Peyton Ramsey ended up being the team's leading rusher with 10 yards total and 3.3 yards per attempt.
So Morgan Ellison had 24 yards.
The leading rusher into the game somehow like that.
Well, I mean, this game looked like the preseason stuff was coming true for everything. So, Simi Cobb looked awesome.
He did.
He looked great, yeah.
Unfortunately, Nick Westbrook goes down with a season-ending injury.
Yeah, I don't know.
Kickoff coverage.
They can't even
on the kickoff coverage. Yeah.
Like, first play, unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know why you would have that guy out there on kickoff coverage. But the offensive line for Indiana can't do anything. They're just overwhelmed by the Ohio State defensive line.
Yeah, losing both Greg Frey and quality linemen, not having Feeney there anymore.
So, like, the takeaways that I think are a little bit different from what we expected is that maybe Denzel Ward isn't actually that great, especially if you're going to put him in fade mode because like he struggled against a very, very obvious game plan.
Yeah, which was just get it in the direction of Simi Cobb.
Yeah, and if that's a weakness, that might be one that Michigan can exploit with Tariq Black or even Zach Gentry.
Yeah.
So
we also might have seen Mike Weber get Wally pipped.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. Yeah, J.K. Dobbins.
J.K. Dobbins.
Awesome.
He looks really, really good.
I was really, like,
not happy watching that.
I mean,
at least the receivers don't look like they were having a lot of trouble getting separation in the first half, and pretty much all their stuff was on just short catch and run.
Zones.
We saw Paris Campbell look like her high school running back.
And he also looked like a high school running back when he dropped a touchdown in the end zone.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I was referring to. Well, he also did when he ran 74 yards by everybody.
Yes, every part of him was high school running back.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I tweeted that I expected, like I said, Mike Weber's not getting his job back.
Mm-hmm.
And
where's he going to transfer to?
Damon Webb's mom was like, keep thinking that. She responded to me on Twitter. I'm like, does everybody in your family have a huge mouth they can't back up?
Nice.
Is that a universal trait?
Oh, what a great way to get the season started on opening night for you, Brian. Man. What a great way to start the season for you.
I didn't respond because I'm like, this can't go anywhere good.
No.
Yeah.
I was just like, that is unbelievable. I mean, you know what? I am going to keep thinking that.
Yeah.
Because Dobbins was, I mean, Weber's just the guy. That's who he is. And Dobbins
was electric, man. Those jump cuts that he had on Thursday night were crazy.
He's got surprising power for a guy who's like 5'7".
Tell you what, though, JT Barrett is still JT Barrett.
Like, for good and bad.
Yeah.
The insertion of Wilson didn't make him any more accurate downfield. He did get, he did have a couple of bombs that weren't his fault, that weren't dropped, but he had a lot of balls where he gets a little bit off schedule and the resulting throw is way wide or way high or just kind of a scattershot passer and will always be that. Also a great runner.
Yeah, he runs for 61 yards without breaking any big ones, but just consistently chipping away at you.
And you can win a lot of games with that, but he's not going to turn into Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a game or two this year where they have to go to the air to win, and that's when they're going to get hit with a loss or two.
And remember, he's terrible in bad weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, good thing Michigan and Ohio State don't play late in the year or anything.
Nice. I like that.
Let's not.
long way to go.
Sorry.
How do you guys factor their game with Oklahoma this week in Columbus? They crushed the Sooners a year ago down in Norman, and they're 7.5-point favorites right now on Saturday night.
I mean, I haven't seen Oklahoma. They had a new coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but it is their offensive coordinator, so the continuity should be pretty decent, at least on that side of the ball. They still got Baker Mayfield.
If I was Ohio State, I'd be worried about what Denzel Ward is going to do against a Oklahoma passing attack.
Yeah, the lucky D.D. Westbrook's gone.
I think, the thing with Indiana was, as great as they looked in the first half, and they took the first half lead and then took another lead, they were very inefficient all game. In that first half, they took a 14-13 lead. In that first half alone, they had 24 snaps where it was either 2nd-and-9 or 3rd-and-9 and longer. And I just don't know if Oklahoma is going to fall behind the chains so consistently like that. The only reason why Indiana got bailed out was because Cobb was making some acrobatic plays. Donovan Hale made some acrobatic plays. They had some one-handed grabs. And I can't imagine that they're going to run the football as poorly as Indiana did. I mean,
that Ohio State defensive line is really good, though.
It is. But I'd like to think that Oklahoma can at least hold their own just a little bit better than Indiana's. I mean, we saw right away on their first drive that running plays were going to be wasted downs.
Yeah, and that was a big concern heading into the season for the Hoosiers, too.
Losing a bunch off the line, losing
their main back.
Yeah,
and not really having anybody
emerge. We saw last year their running productivity go down.
Yeah.
And now they've lost some good offensive linemen, and it just doesn't look.
And I didn't think Devine Redding was that great, but they don't seem to have a guy on that level anyway.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's kind of strange. They just have a bunch of guys.
Yeah, Mike Majette looks like he should be like a slot receiver.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, moving on. Northwestern 31, Nevada 20. I have no opinions about this.
Yeah.
Do you have any opinions about this?
Hey, Clayton Thorson.
Clayton Thorson threw for Nevada last year.
That's true. All right. No opinions about it. Justin Jackson, a very Justin Jackson stat line. 30 carries for 109 yards. No touchdowns. Totally. Long of 13.
Yeah, he's...
That is extremely Justin Jackson.
That is the most Justin Jackson. The least All-American.
Oh, man.
So we have no opinions about this?
Oh, I thought Clayton Thorson looked really good. I mean, the book on him all offseason was, can he keep the passing going without Austin Carr? And, competition aside, 352 yards passing. He looked really good.
All right, you keep on the bandwagon of 2017 Mitch Leidner. I'm gonna not do that. Finally, our final game.
I'm not projecting him to be in the draft. I just think he'll be an all right college quarterback this fall.
Our final game of the week is the most Big Ten game of the week, and it's not even that Big Ten because it's a win, but it is Nebraska 43, Arkansas State 36, which is a score I could have predicted.
Yeah, for real.
And the Nebraska passing defense gives up 400 yards like in a dink and dunk fashion, and I mean, they managed to pull this out, but this looks like, the anti-black shirts kind of defense that we thought was kind of in the past.
Yeah. Arkansas State had 32 first downs. 25 of them came through the air.
I mean, they just Purdued it up.
Like, yeah.
Well, Nebraska did have, I think his name's Chris Jones, the number one corner, got hurt before the year, and I think...
They were supposed to have a good secondary, though.
Yeah. I do like Josh Kalu, but... It just doesn't seem like the depth is there.
And this would be like a situation where your nickelback does get exposed.
Yeah.
Possibly your dimeback.
Yeah, at this point.
How did Tanner Lee do? Guy ridiculously being hyped.
19 for 32, 238 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Not bad, but not spectacular against Arkansas State.
Well, we'll see if the hype is real, but people are like, oh, this guy's... They were ranking him above Wilton Spate going into this year. I'm like, dude, he was terrible at Tulane.
Yeah.
Right.
That made about as much sense as the Clayton Thorson best quarterback in the conference article.
Oh, no.
Not that I have brought that up several times or anything.
Now I know why you made fun of me. I didn't realize somebody wrote that article.
Yeah. Rivals posted that before the season,
That's right.
I disagreed.
Yeah, well, I do too. I mean, I just think he's going to be solid.
Yeah.
You know, the thing, I don't mean to go back Northwestern, but, you know, he's a solid quarterback, and the Big Ten West sucks with quarterbacks. So, I mean, like, that could be a thing for Northwestern, but that doesn't make him really any good.
No. Yeah. But anyway, Nebraska, so stuff.
Kind of sketch.
Kinda yeah, sketch. I mean, they really haven't had a great defensive program since they joined the Big Ten. I mean, they had some moments, especially when Randy Gregory, the year and a half that he played for him, you know, yeah. But that's about it. You know, that's really about it.
Yeah, when they had Gregory and Levante David, they were good. And even then, they weren't killer.
Yeah, they were.
No.
And those are some killer players. David's a great NFL linebacker.
Mm-hmm. But the good thing is their schedule is kind of soft. They have Oregon this week, which will be kind of tough for them. The Ducks are 7.5-point favorites. But then they got a nice lineup of Northern Illinois, Rutgers, Illinois. You know, so they're going to rack up some wins. But, you know, they play Ohio State. The games with the Buckeyes have not been competitive since they joined the Big Ten.
Not at all.
Yeah, yeah. And they do get Wisconsin at home, and they get Iowa at home at the end of the year. Oh, they also go to Penn State, though.
Yeah, I'm not feeling
that's going to be tricky for them. Yeah, I'm not feeling that either.
They are probably not going to contend in the Big Ten West.
No, I think the schedule and the defense just looks like they're going to be
behind. I wish we had an over-under on, like, days that Keyshawn Johnson's kid would last in the middle of Nebraska. Like, that seemed like the most obvious insta-transfer since Snoop Dogg's kid at UCLA. I was that's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It kind of seems like a weird culture fit there, right?
Yeah. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Thank you, Jamie. We always have to cover a ton of games at the beginning of the season. And
I know. Integrity.
So we will talk to you next week, sir.
Sounds good, guys. Enjoy.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. Somebody please get me Mike McCray's IV. Thank you.
Who's got it better than